This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Jamie Smith and Alex Taylor from the Online Wine Tasting Club. How are you guys?
We're very well, thank
really
you.
Really good, thanks.
Cool. Last week we were talking about how you guys got going and the start of everything, but this week I want to just talk a wee bit about your videos, because there's two parts to your business. You've got the wine tasting and the packs that we talked about. You've also got videos that go with them, both on YouTube, mm-hmm. But also live on, is it Zoom that you're using?
It's actually all through YouTube Live now, so people can join in and they can do the interactive stuff and comment along and join in the interactive tasting notes on YouTube now. We found that was a really great platform. Zoom at that point had just become almost an unnecessary step for us, because we weren't showing other people's faces on the screen, so we've accidentally become sort of, you know, YouTube live streamers, which was an unexpected career turn. Hey guys, like and subscribe. I mean, the weird thing is we had two bits which we think were our USP. One was the packaging and the other was the format of the show. And there's so many different formats of shows out there. There's people doing some really cool stuff, like, a French company owned Chateau Pommard, isn't it? And they have this interactive tasting software which they've developed, which almost turns it into a game. And you have to identify whether it's citrus fruits or, you know, which has to be, it's great if you're doing a wide range, but actually I did one which was 100% sharp. Chardonnay, and so I was like, right, citrus fruits, oak, and like, yeah, it was like, yeah, this is all Chablis, so it's the same answers every time.
Yeah.
But it's a great concept, and there's been some real innovation in that. And what we realised first of all was that as we went up above about 20 people, that initial joy of having people unmute the Zoom and start trying to talk at you was an absolute liability. It was a total liability.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
So we had, and not to mention, when you went up to 500 people, you're spending hundreds of pounds a month on Zoom fees. So it wasn't the right solution. It wasn't the right format for the show. And there was clearly something there. And I think the best thing that we had was a comment who just said, watching you guys banter with each other is a bit like watching Top Gear. And for all its strong points and weak points, it kind of sunk in that there is a sort of Top Gear, for all its laddishness and daft pranks, it has succeeded more than any other car show ever in broadening the appeal of the car culture to people who don't give a damn and are quite happy to just buy whatever car they want. And yet somehow they're finding themselves looking at some stupid supercar zooming around a track with flames coming out of its back. And that really resonated, because if we could do the same for people to make them care about that, that was worth doing. And what it meant was we were sort of grounded in that idea that it had to be something which wasn't about looking at people's kitchens. It wasn't about, actually, I'm getting confected cherries, you're wrong, you idiot. You know, it wasn't about that level of wine tasting. It was about the story. It was about the people behind it. It was about the what's different and cool about this thing. And it meant we had to come up with a show. And the show format, Lee Isaacs described as a cross between The One Show and Top Gear, where you go, there's the bit in the studio,
yep.
And then there's the pre-made videos, which be a bit richer and do the drone shots of the vineyards and help show off and make you fall in love with these regions.
And it was really, during COVID, take people to places that they couldn't go. Because here's a bottle of New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, great, lovely. Tastes like grapefruit and gooseberries, great.
Yeah.
But when we go, you know, here's a drone of the vineyards, here's, you know, us having a chat with the winemaker about it. It brings it to life, and people then go, you know what, there's 100 New Zealand Sauvignon Blancs that I can choose, all at a very similar price point, you know, in your shop or wherever. But I've heard about that guy's one, so that's what I
know,
I want
that
to
looks
drink.
A beautiful place, that's Hawke's Bay, or that's more.
And as soon as lockdown's over, that's where I want to go, kind of thing. And that's what we wanted to bring to people, that we never wanted to be a wine tasting as such. We wanted to be an evening in with a bit of wine.
Yeah,
and I think that's where we wanted to be different.
And the other thing about that was that it let us go, it let us trick people into learning about wine a bit more. So to take the New Zealand one, I got to geek out and do it in a kind of way. I did a I think it was about a 6 minute long video about tractors and machine harvesting, of course, because machine harvesting is so key to the Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc story. So let's talk to people. Let's say this isn't as black and white. The image of people going out and picking these grapes by hand, it's great for some things, but it's not so great for other things. So we're able to cover something kind of important, really quite important, and just that was, if that was that one message they got across, is that sometimes it's right to do it by hand and sometimes it's right to do it by machine. Just because this guy says I hand harvest doesn't mean it's better. That's a really cool and important message to get across, and it let me put lots of videos of tractors up, which my 3-year-old loved.
I've only done one of your tastings, to be fair. You guys sent us a nice pack, and me and Jane sat around and watched it and participated and enjoyed it. And one of the things that got me was the way you intermixed quite good quality video shots of the wineries and all that sort of thing with the banter in the studio sort of thing. And I thought the format was quite good. I mean, if you think about it, maybe compared to, say, the wine show.
Yeah.
Because they do offer their wines available by the bottle. They'll ship you a case. Well,
yeah.
I don't know, you're not bottling miniatures for them now, are you?
Well, we did. We actually did a live show.
We did a live show with Joe.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, we did based on one of their series. So they picked the wines out and we
have six wines from Portugal.
We put together one of our shows with Portuguese wines with, you know, we got access to their videos from the show, so we were able to kind of cut and paste that. And then there was myself, Alex, and Joe kind of then talked through the wines afterwards, which was really good.
So it was brilliant.
I'd have to say our shows probably have a slightly smaller budget than the wine shows.
Yeah, we did, and that was wonderful, because again, what we did, we wanted it to be a mix between us and, you know, when you're watching something on TV, that's going to be very sort of there's a level that you want to pitch it at, and it's much more about the fun side of things. Let's get some cool looking celebrities doing beautiful shots in beautiful places and maybe get them to learn a little bit about Cork. So we picked a couple of the fun topics they'd done, and then we added in a couple that we did a whole video on the Cork thing, which talked about agglomerate corks, and it talked about, you know,
double tops.
There's all sorts double of things tops. That we talked about, but we used this cool footage they had and showed the bark coming off the trees and the things that were powerful. I just think that, to me, it's like that is the format that wine TV should be. It should be interesting, and you should have the wine, because what's the fun of watching someone else enjoying it? It's just like, this is great.
I always remember listening to Oz Clark taste a wine on radio.
Yeah,
on the BBC, and I was thinking, Oz Clark's great presenter, you know, brilliant, but it's still rubbish when you're drinking wine on radio and you're sitting there without the wine. But if you've got the wine, it's a completely different interactive experience.
It is, and it frees you up to not be as Oz and this generation of presenters are. They're lyrical genius in describing these wines that makes you feel feelings inside. I can't help but be utterly in awe of that, and I will never be able to do that.
You miss Gilly Goulden, mate.
I miss Gilly Goulden, absolutely. And, you know, it's a proper skill to be able to do that and capture that sort of essence of the wine in words. But we don't need to, because the people have the wine. So they tell us what they think it tastes like. So what we've got, I think probably is new since you joined us, is people put in their words for the tasting into a big word cloud. So,
oh, yeah, I've seen those.
Yeah, we start building up these word clouds for people. We've switched it. We're now using Slido, aren't we? Yeah, so that we can do... drag the wines into your favourite order of the night, or we can rate them with sliders, or you could just do these, you know, the tasting notes. And one of the things we're starting to do now is tell us which are your favourites. Okay, now we're going to tell you how much they cost. Now tell us again which are your favourites. And that's quite a fun thing to do.
Do you find, when you ask them that their favourites become the more expensive wines?
Not always.
Interesting, not.
Because usually when you taste wines with people and then you go, oh, this is the really expensive wine, then they go, oh, that's the one I really liked. And they're more swayed by the price than they are.
So we always did it at the beginning without the prices, because we didn't want that kind of... Because if you know, if people want to be a wine person, they're getting into it, and they sit in front of wine people, and they go, here's a 10 quid bottle, here's a 100 quid bottle, and they're talking to us, they want to feel smart by picking the 100 quid bottle as being better, even if they like it or don't like it. So we try and do it without the prices, because price, there's so many things that, you know, make what the price depends on, you know, whether it comes from a, you know, a Grand Cru or it comes from a DOCG rather than just a little village wine. It doesn't always represent what that, we just want people, what did you like? This did you like that? And then hopefully when we put the prices up, you feel that that represents a good value for money, whether it's good value for money at 30 quid or at £13, and you want to go and buy some. But I think if you put the prices up first, you get this preconceived notion. If we put a price up and go, this is a 6 quid bottle of wine, people go, oh, it's going to be a bit naff, isn't it? But if we do a 6 quid bottle of wine that we've found that thinks is epic, it's great to put that up.
And that does quite often drive sales as well. People like suddenly find that this wine that they thought was absolutely brilliant, it's only 8 quid, they're like, they go off and buy cases of it, and that's fantastic. But yeah, it certainly can work around that people do see suddenly, oh, well, absolutely, I get why that is. And it can backfire horribly. We did watch one tasting which a customer of ours let us join in. They packed some sensational South African wines. And one of them, we thought there was a typo. It was £400 a bottle, and we'd run these through. There was £50 of wine in each of these pouches, you know. Got 2.5 grams of aluminium protecting 50 quid's worth of Cabernet Sauvignon. And the people reacted very negatively to, yes, it's nice, but it's not £400. And there was the poor winemaker on live going, backfired. I'll have the 40 quid on, not the 400 quid.
Yeah, I'll have a case of that.
I'll have a case of that for the same price, yeah.
Yeah, the pricing, once you get over a certain point, it's all about supply and demand and what the winemaker can get away with and how much volume they've got. So, you know.
And what people are willing to pay. If people are willing to pay £400, happy days.
But in a side-by-side tasting like that, you're very exposed if you are charging a lot more.
Very exposed.
You can be looking like a bit... I think it's why we've had a bit of a sort of a kind of negative reaction from some of the quite high-end people when we said, would you like us to do this? They said, no, actually, I don't really want to.
No. And because if it's in a pouch, it doesn't have the same gravitas. And when you're dealing with luxury goods...
Yeah.
It's not necessarily the liquid itself, it's everything around it that gives the value for the product.
So. We did quite a fun one, which was we love to do a wine A versus wine B, or a three-way wine competition. And Jamie learnt that over in the States with, you know, the sort of vino versus vino competitions that they'd hold in their bars. And what we did was... we did a recreation of the Judgment of Paris, California versus France. But we did the Chardonnay, the Bordeaux blend. But we also introduced Pinot Noir
in as well.
So 6 wines. Which do you prefer? And we put some proper little curveballs in there. So we did a growth Bordeaux against it was a Stags' Leap
Martellus,
which is, you know, cracking wine. Both really quite pricey and not a million miles off each other. But then we did a Grand Cru Gevrey. Was it Gevrey? No.
Premier Cru.
Was it Premier?
Saint-Jacques.
Okay. Versus a 30 quid Santa Rita Hills Pinot Noir. And the Santa Rita Hills smashed it. Absolutely. People massively preferred it. And it was one of those real sort of grounding moments where you just think, here's a wine where everybody says, this is the one to go to. You want Pinot Noir, go to Burgundy, go to the best vineyard sites. And here was, they'd only made 300 bottles of it. It was literally one single barrel from one row of vines. This is terroir. This is exclusivity versus quite a bulk wine, but by a cracking, it was by Sashi Moorman, from his...
Sandy Project,
that's the one. And absolutely brilliant wine. So yeah, it's a... It throws up all sorts of curveballs on the results that we see, and it's nice.
What's the future for you guys? You've just moved into a new warehouse, just a bit further up from Tring, up towards Luton.
Yeah, lucky us, glamorous part of the world. Exactly. That it is,
So there's multiple things, and I think what we have to realise is what we've got with our tech is new, and it's wine in a pouch. And it's got to get out there and people have to become accepting of it. We know how long it took for people to become accepting of screw caps or bag-in-box or those kind of things, or, you know, keg wines. So we need to get people to accept that this is, you know, canned wines have the same thing. But, you know, accept that this is a good format to have wines in, and it's acceptable. And the wine is good. Does it matter how it arrived if the wine's good? So we've got this, you know, the idea of this try before you buy service, and I think that's great. We've got the idea of wine clubs that we can pack for people. But I also think the next thing we're looking at is the entree for bars, pubs, restaurants, that kind of thing. Because I think there's so many pubs out there that have a very entry-level wine list because they're scared of the cost. So they can open their bottle of standard Merlot or their bottle of standard whatever, and they pour it, and if they sell two glasses and then throw the rest away, they've kind of broken even. They don't want to open a bottle of Chablis or a bottle of Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc.
Have one person order it to pour one glass Sunday, and then it's gone off the next week.
Lose the rest. So if we were able to get people on board to take 125ml or 175ml pouches of wine, A, they can offer better wines, less wastage, better margin, less training needed. The service is quicker because you've not got to pour into that silly little metal jug and pour it out again.
Clean it first.
And then also, if we go through wholesalers with this, the distribution costs drop drastically because we're not shipping glass bottles.
You can fit twice as many into a van.
And then recycling for the pub. So it's a win-win-win across.
Yeah.
Really, really good, except for, I know Alex listened to the podcast I did with Win in Rome.
Yep.
DOC, DOCG wines, they won't allow you to sell the wines in package, so you will be limited to New World wines if you go down that route.
Yeah, there's all sorts of complications.
There's lots of rules that are there to stop people selling wines in modern packaging, so you've got to be aware of that. You'll probably find your Chablis you can't do, but you could do a top American Chardonnay.
Yeah, top Cali Chardonnay, and that's the thing. And for me, when I sit down and I have a meal, I love it when you go to a nice restaurant and they've got a well-paired wine list so that you have a glass with that and a glass with that course. But particularly if you're driving, you want having a cracking meal. I don't want to have their cheapest wine, the house red with rather have something that's really good.
So I've just put a big kibosh in there, but the
wine industry, a lot of these things stick up to try.
But that is quite a nice idea, isn't it? And the nice thing about it is packaging, although I'm going to finish up in a minute and we'll talk about some of the machinery that you've got. The issue is that ultimately you've still got glass bottles going into the beginning of your machine, so you've still got the same issues with glass weight. Whereas if you can change that format to a better format than glass as your initial, then your CO2 footprint just drops through the floorboards.
It massively drops off. What we look at the moment, end to end, including the shipping of glass bottles to us, which is, as you say, that's the way they come out of the DOCGs. If we want to do a Barolo and allow you a taste of it, it's going to come into us in glass bottles because it had to be in those glass bottles for a number of years. Even with that, we're about 15 times less CO2. That's the position we're in. Because if you think about it, the wine's going into a warehouse and then it gets sent out in transit vans to the pubs and restaurants. Well, instead it's coming into our warehouse and now it's going out. So we're reducing it massively already. But For the New World wines, it's a question of getting it in bulk, absolutely. And then it's so much easier for us to do. We just simply connect our winery pump to the thing, to our machinery, and it churns through it. And the great thing about that is that then the costs drop massively for our customers, which means that people spend less getting that glass of it in a pub. And we want to keep driving these costs down so that there's just less friction for trying new wines and getting some cool stuff.
And also, one of the problems you get in this country is a lot of the bag and box, etc., are entry-level wines.
Yeah.
And it would be nice to be able to get, you know, the Enomatic machines are fine. They provide us a solution to it.
They're pretty bulky, but they work.
And they're expensive.
Yeah.
They're not cheap, and they're not. You do need some skills in being able to run them. Whereas cutting the corner off a sachet and pouring it in, anybody can do that.
If you're a small little restaurant, you need a chunk of space to put that as well. You know, and they're not a cheap bit of kit either.
No.
So.
And nitrogen generators for them and everything. Yeah. So this is it's a very low friction way of just offering a range of wines by the glass, and I think that's a really great, great solution. So we look forward to doing that. But in terms of the consumer club, what we really want to do is start getting out and travelling to the vineyards and making some really cool content and working with some great wineries to tell their stories. And that would be great. And if they're not represented in the UK at the moment and we could help import those wines, get them in front of a whole new set of customers, it's brilliant. The positive reaction we've had, some incredibly unlikely wines, has just been so heartening, so reassuring. Where we've had people buying, you know, Blauer Zweigelts by the ton, and we've had people the favourite wine of the night one night was a orange wine from Romania, and you know, all sorts of unlikely stories.
It's putting stuff in front of people that they might not just grab it off the shelf, and I think that's a lot of fun. And it's not my job to tell people what they should like, what's the best wine, and you know, we use it as a little bit like a tagline. We just want to get people to their next great glass of wine, and that's what it is, you know, without having that commitment of buying full bottles, full cases.
The fun thing is that Jamie's a WSET educator as well as you, and you know, the funny thing is that the one thing that we have not ever done and we have no plans to do is online or hybrid WSET courses. So Jamie just personally feels that he much prefers teaching them in person, and that's totally fine. Certainly we'd love to have a range of wine sample kits for WSET off the shelf and for Master of Wine exams and all of those kind of things, where there's just no chance to do that. And we can, when we've got this shelf life absolutely nailed for all wines, we can have them in stock. And so if people want to call them off and just buy a pack to do with their course, fantastic. That's definitely on the list, but not doing the courses ourselves.
Cool. All right then, guys, I think we'll wrap it up there.
Thank you.
Cheers, mate.
Pleasure.